is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
The big boxes of the suburban landscape are embracing organic. The most recent evidence is that over 600 McDonald's across the northeastern United States are going to be serving Newman's Own organic coffee. But local food producers say that we need to look further than the organic sticker on our food and think about where it comes from and how it was grown. Rebecca Neen is an organic farmer and brewer. She's co-owner of Cranogue Ales on Left Fields Farms in the Shuswap region of BC. She joins me on the line this morning from her home. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
What are the limitations of simply buying organic in your view?
Well, if you simply buy organic without regard to the distance the food has traveled or who it's coming from, you could actually well be supporting some of the same people that have caused the caused major agricultural pollution and the destruction of our landscape in the first place.
And so what should we be thinking about when we see organic food?
Well, the first thing to think about is, where did it come from? Was it grown locally? Who made it? Who owns the company that is purporting to be selling organic food? Of course, there's always the question of, is it actually organic? Is it certified organic or not? But mostly it's to look at your organic food choices, to look at your food choices overall, and to try to buy, instead of, say, the highly processed versions of food, whether it's organic or not, to start buying directly from the farmers or as close to the farmer as you can get.
And so if we see something specific like organic lettuce from California, what do we need to be thinking about with that?
Well, in part that depends on what time of the year it is. If it's summertime and you go to your grocery store and all you can find is organic lettuce from California, there's a problem. Why on earth should you be buying organic lettuce from California in any time between May and October when, you know, the Fraser Valley is full of local organic producers who are supplying the same product, generally at the same price, a great deal fresher without it having to have traveled several thousand miles. If you're looking at organic lettuce in February, then you might want to start asking yourself why you're choosing to buy organic lettuce or why you're choosing to buy tomatoes in February when they're not in season. And you could be making choices that reflect where you live and what people actually grow in this region.
And so if we're given the choice between local and non-organic or organic and from somewhere like California, should we choose the local?
Well, I hate to break out of the box, the big box here, but there's more than two choices. If you persist in buying from large-scale big box stores in a couple of years, that's the only choices there are going to be. We're not going to have the choice of buying from farmers, whether they're organic or not organic, that are local, because the big box stores will have returned all production to generally third world countries, and there will be no local option. So rather than simply stating this as do we buy local non-organic versus buying non-local organic, I think we have to be a little bit more creative and start looking at ways that we can all, well, let me put it this way. You have a family doctor. Well, at least some of us do, at any rate. Why not have a family farmer? It'll keep you healthier in the long run. It'll keep your whole landscape healthier. And you can get away from the destruction, the wholesale destruction of both our economic system and our ecology that is offered by long-range, long-distance food, whether it's organic or non-organic.
And where should we go to find these producers?
They're all over the place. I know of at least three weekly farmers markets in Vancouver. Now, you have to understand I'm not based in Vancouver, so I don't know for sure, but I know there's at least three farmers markets every week in Vancouver where you can get directly in touch with farmers. There's a huge number of box programs like small potatoes or other box programs like that that actually deliver locally sourced organic groceries straight to your door. You don't even have to go to a store for these programs. You can go to a store if you want. There's a lot of local stores which will identify the farm that that grew the food that you're buying, or at the very least where it came from, what province it came from, whether it came from out of country or not. And in fact, every store should be displaying this. It actually is the law. And you can also get directly in touch with local farmers through the farmers markets or through online databases like the one that's at certifiedorganic.bc.ca or through Farm Folk City Folk. And that way you can order directly from the farmer. You can save yourself a whole whack of money. You can get in touch with the local farmer and learn what it means to be eating seasonally. And you can save yourself the headache of having to go shopping every week.
Do you think we need another kind of certification that includes concepts like food miles as well as organic?
I'm not sure that another form of certification is really the answer. Whenever you get certification, I'm speaking as a certified organic producer, whenever you get certification involved, the whole point is to reduce the customer's own responsibility for finding out where their food is coming from and for making those decisions themselves. And I think, in fact, the answer is not simply to stick another label on it, but is for everyone to become just a little bit more involved in where their food is coming from and in the food system as a whole. Even if you're working, you know, a 16-hour day, you can come home to a beautiful box of groceries that actually has a message from one or two of the farmers enclosed in the box, and you get to know what's happening in your local community. And then maybe instead of going for a walk in Trout Lake one weekend, you'll actually take a walk out to the farm and maybe even potentially dig a potato yourself for the first time in your life.
So are there options for people who want to shop responsibly but don't have that much time to go shopping for groceries?
Well, I think the first option in that case is to sign up with one of the box programs. And the other is to work directly with some local farmer. Again, you can go through certifiedorganic.bc.ca. There's a huge database there of farmers, and it'll help you to get in touch with someone directly. This is especially good for things like meat, where you can buy locally, organically grown meat at extremely low prices when you compare it to the store, and you know exactly what you're getting and where it came from. So I think your first two choices would be box programs are going directly to the farmer, and then after that, go to the farmer's market. It's a social event as much as it is a shopping event, and then finally, you know, go back to the grocery store.
And is there certain food that people shouldn't be eating at certain times of year? Like in February, should we actually be eating lettuce?
Well, in February, we should be thinking about foods that have been stored: squash, carrots, beets, potatoes. Frozen vegetables. There's lots of those available, and they're very high quality. They're minimally processed. But if you need something fresh to eat, and I totally understand that urge, you want to try something like sprouts, which can be grown year-round without regard to the season. When we start eating unseasonally, like lettuce in February, tomatoes in February is a really huge one. I mean, for one thing, they taste vile. They taste like little round things made out of cardboard. They don't taste like tomatoes at all. Why should you subject yourself to that? Eat something that either has been grown seasonally or has been preserved, and you'll wind up with a much much better quality food, and you'll also wind up supporting your own local economy.
How do you know where food comes from?
You ask. I know.
And they have to tell you.
Well, in fact, your local grocer does have to tell you.
Okay.
That it is actually the law. And it's amazing that if you just sort of, you know, go into your local grocer and say, hey, you're supposed to be putting this sign on this food, they have to do it, and they will do it. It's not a big deal. Of course, if you're shopping, you know, directly and locally, and you're shopping at stores that already display that, you don't really have a problem. And when you're going to one of the box programs, they almost always tell you which farm even your food was grown on, not just what province it came from.
And so there is a legal requirement for all grocery stores to label where it came from?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is it so important, in your view, to buy local? Is it more than just the fossil fuel use?
Yeah, it is. When you're buying local, you're supporting your local economy. You're supporting local farmers. You're doing a couple of different things. One thing, when you choose a local organic farmer, you're sending a very strong message to everybody else in the agricultural community. Not just that farmer, but other local organic farmers who say, hey, look at that, somebody else is purchasing our food, and this is okay. We are going to be able to make a living doing this. You're also sending a message to local non-organic farmers that, gee, look, our neighbor over there has got a whole whack of happy customers buying their food. They're getting a slightly better price for it. The customers are happy because they're not paying quite as much. Maybe we should think about growing organically. And, you know, maybe we can get away from all these cancer-causing crap we're spraying on our food. You're also, though, and it's a little more subtle, but what you're really doing is keeping your money in your own community. There's a whole bunch of studies, there's been some really excellent ones done in the UK, actually, about what happens to the money that when you spend it locally. If you go and buy a locally made product from a locally owned store, for example, 95% of that dollar stays right in your local community. And it, in fact, generates... not only does that money stay in your community, but it's actually generating more money within that community because that local, the local supplier has managed to stay open, the local retail store has managed to stay open, the people they're employing are still there. So you've actually enhanced your local economy by one little simple act of buying local food. In addition, when you choose to buy at a big box store, not only does most of that money immediately go out of the community, you are in fact directly contributing to the loss of economic resources in your community, because the only money that stays in the community from a big box store is from the sub-poverty level wages that are being paid to local clerks. That's not a very good return on your dollar. So it's good for not only your local economy to be shopping locally, but it's also really important for local producers.
Well, thanks for speaking with me this morning, Rebecca.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with organic farmer and brewer Rebecca Neen. She's the co-owner of Cranogue Ales on Leftfield Farms in the Shoeshop region of BC. This is Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, 102.7 FM.
Indigenous peoples, local communities, and smallholder farmers have repeatedly called for a ban on Terminator seed technology. Last week at a meeting of the Working Group on 8J, who report to the UN's Convention on Biological Diversity, new recommendations were put forward by rich nations that seriously threaten an existing moratorium on Terminator seed technology. Hope Shan of the ETC Group, which is based in Ottawa, also known as the Etc. Group, was in Grenada, Spain for the meeting and saw these developments unfold, and she joins us this morning from her home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Good morning, Hope.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
And it's nice to talk to you. Before we talk about the events in Spain, can you describe for us the essential features of Terminator seed technology?
Yes, Terminator technology refers to plants that have been genetically modified so that they render sterile seeds at harvest time. And the reason that these were developed, they were developed by the multinational seed and agrochemical industry and by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And the idea is, of course, to prevent farmers from reusing their harvested seed. And it's a means of maximizing seed industry profits because it obviously would require farmers to return to the commercial seed market every year.
Now, recount for us then what happened in Grenada. What was the process that led to the new proposed recommendations?
Well, let me just say that ever since these Terminator technology has been, ever since the patents were unveiled back in 1998, there was massive public opposition to this idea. It was considered a very dangerous anti-farmer technology. And starting back in 1998, the issue went to the United Nations, to the Convention on Biological Diversity. And in the year 2000, this Convention on Biological Diversity passed a basically a de facto moratorium, which would prohibit the field testing and commercial use of this technology because they saw it as a threat to small farmers, to biodiversity, and the environment. And in the last couple of years, what we've seen is that that moratorium has been under attack by industry and by some governments, such as the United States and Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. So what happened in Grenada is that this was a small meeting leading up to a bigger meeting next month. This time, the Canadian government was tried to be take a more neutral position. Previously, what we saw last year was that the Canadian government tried to undermine the moratorium, and had because we were a memo was leaked to us that revealed that the Canadian government was going to propose wording that would lead to allowing for the field testing and commercialization of Terminator technology. At this past meeting, a week and a half ago in Grenada, the Canadian government officially stated that it's neither for nor against Terminator technology. But in reality, what we saw was that they were backing the Australian government and the New Zealand government in attempting to weaken this moratorium.
So what? How did that process unfold in Grenada? Because I was looking at your blog on the ETC website, and it seems like it kind of came out of the blue, that it was a bit of a surprise, the maneuver that happened by Australia.
Well, it was sort of a shameful thing to see happening at that meeting, because the purpose of that meeting really was to consider how Terminator technology would affect Indigenous peoples, small farmers, and the right of farmers to save seeds. Unfortunately, those governments really did not take this into consideration. And although there are many governments all over the world who have called for an outright ban on this technology, what we saw in Grenada was very skillful maneuvering by just a few companies, by a few countries. And I want to mention too that the agrochemical and seed industry was there in force. Companies like Monsanto, Delta and Pineland, the International Seed Federation. There's tremendous pressure to get this technology, to gain acceptance for the technology. And the reason for that, of course, is that this is just too profitable for the multinational seed industry to abandon this goal.
What was the specific maneuver that the Australian negotiators took?
The Australian negotiator, in a small contact group, a negotiating session, said that their government was not prepared to allow language referring to a precautionary approach to Terminator unless they were able to insert language referring to a case-by-case risk assessment of the technology. Now, that may not seem too damaging on the surface, but basically what that means is that they are weakening, by inserting that kind of language allowing for case-by-case risk assessment, it's opening the door to basically regulatory approval of this technology. So if you have a de facto moratorium with language that calls for case-by-case risk assessment, it's basically shot with holes and is opening the door to regulatory approval. The Canadian government's role was that they another maneuver by the Australian government was that they did not want to use the word reaffirm in association with the moratorium, and that instead they would use the term that they would just simply recall the moratorium, which was much weaker language. And Canada stated that reaffirming the moratorium was not needed and that the moratorium could just be recalled. Fortunately, the Canadian government did not insist on this point, and the moratorium was ultimately reaffirmed but weakened by this extra language.
Now, where do the majority of countries who were participating stand with respect to the moratorium on Terminator technology? Were there voices that were heard in opposition?
Absolutely. The African group, the government of Uganda represented, gave a talk for the African group and gave a very passionate speech calling for an outright ban on the technology and a recommendation that governments consider national regulations to prohibit the field testing and commercialization of this technology. So the African group was very strong. The entire European community supported a reaffirmation of the moratorium. India and Brazil both mentioned that they have, in fact, passed national laws banning this technology. Egypt was also very strongly against the technology. Kenya. So the vast majority of countries support the moratorium. Many are calling for it to be strengthened, and so it really is an outrageous position to come by just a few countries to come and say that to try to undermine that moratorium by introducing language that will ultimately lead to regulatory approval.
And what are the risks with this language going forward to the upcoming meeting? I believe it's in Brazil.
Well, the risk is that the moratorium will be further weakened, and we are at this point working with governments all over the world to not only reaffirm this moratorium but to strengthen it. And the worst thing that could happen, of course, is if the Canadian government, Australia, and New Zealand continue to try this tactic of undermining the moratorium.
What was the response of farmers' rights groups who were there in Grenada to talk about the dangers and the downsides of Terminator technology?
Unfortunately, there was not a lot of debate on the floor about the real dangers of Terminator technology, but what there were official papers, an expert group report that had met several years ago, and their report went to this meeting in Grenada, and there was no question that the technology would be extremely dangerous for indigenous peoples, local communities, and farmers' rights, because basically this technology has the potential to extinguish the ability of farmers to do seed saving and community level plant breeding. There's no question that it would have a major impact on indigenous and local communities, and in all kinds of ways, in terms of seed saving and seed exchange practices.
And how serious a threat is that to farmers who are practicing small scale agriculture?
Well, there are an estimated 1.4 billion people who depend on farm-safe seed as their primary seed source. Or just put another way, an estimated 3/4 of the world's farmers routinely save seed from their harvest to reuse the following season. So this is not, although, you know, in North America we don't hear about farmers as much saving seed from year to year, it still isn't a very, very common practice. It's the foundation, basically, for local food security.
And presumably the large seed companies who are interested in seeing their profits increase from this technology would have no qualms about really sticking it to farmers who were using, trying to save their own seed.
Well, there's no question that when the patents were first revealed introducing this technology, the companies and the U.S. Department of Agriculture basically said that this was a way to protect the proprietary nature of seeds and to introduce them into what they called then the second and third world, where farmers routinely save seed from their harvest. In other words, it's a way for them to penetrate new markets. They won't need to worry about whether these countries observe patents on seeds, because this technology will be a biological enclosure. It's a biological tool to guarantee monopoly for the companies.
What avenues of action and opposition are open to people to press for the maintenance of an effective moratorium?
Well, fortunately, there's a new ban terminator campaign that was basically started in Canada by Canadian NGOs and the National Farmers Union, and is a member of the ban terminator campaign. And that's an excellent place for people to go and to find out more about resources that are available to explain the issue. Canadians are being asked to write to Prime Minister Harper and to their members of Parliament. It's very important that the new Conservative government take a very clear position against Terminator and abandon the Liberal Party position of neither promoting nor opposing Terminator. I can suggest that any of your listeners who want to find out more, just go to banterminator.org, and that's banterminator, all one word, .org.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me this morning, Hope.
Thank you very much.
Take care. I've been speaking with Hope Shand of the Etc. Group, and Hope spoke with us from her home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and the website that she referred to for the Ban Terminator campaign is at banterminator.org.